too many libertarians have been terrified because they're afraid, well, I might make a compromise and that would make me dirty.
Hi, I'm Michael Moynihan with Reason TV, and today we are with Tom G. Palmer, the author of Realizing Freedom, Libertarian Theory, History, and Practice, a senior fellow at the Cato Institute, and vice president for international programs at the Atlas Economic Research Foundation. Tom, welcome.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Give our viewers an impression of what you're trying to achieve with this book, what the sort of premise of this book is.
I wanted to present a kind of coherent picture of libertarian ideas with two elements to it. One is it's important to respond to our critics. So I have some very pointed responses to communitarians, extreme egalitarians, socialists, conservative communitarians, and so on, because I think too many occasions in the past, defenders of liberty have retired from the field, and I think you need to push back. The other element was to show that liberty is about doing. It's about implementing freedom. It's about realizing freedom, not just talking about it or having seminars about it. Those are important, but it's about going out and doing the hard work of changing the world to realize a more free, more just society.
The first piece in this book that I saw was 1981. That's where the sort of starting point is. How are we doing now in the period from when you started writing these pieces to where we are right now?
Last couple of years have been really bad, especially in the United States. The Bush administration and now Obama, or the Bobama administration, as I like to think of it, has been a catastrophe. But if you go back to 1981, there has been tremendous improvement. There's no more Soviet Union. The Warsaw Pact is finished. There's been this worldwide spread of an awareness of liberty. The internet, communications have generally had a very, very positive impact. So I think that even though the last couple of years have been really bad, we're living at one of the most free times in human history. But it's fragile. This sort of thing can be unwound, and we should look at the failures of the classical liberals in the 19th century to prepare for the 20th. I worry that we might become complacent in our liberty and not think about what is at stake, that it is, in fact, quite fragile. The rise of protectionism. President Obama just this week did something unbelievably stupid and has now set off a trade war with China.
These are the tire tariffs.
Right.
In China. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Now the Chinese are talking about chicken tariffs and automobile part tariffs and so on. Nothing good will come of this. It's very, very dangerous. And we need to act quickly to defeat protectionism and to assert the moral superiority of free trade and free markets. Not just it's more efficient. It is. It is morally better. And we need to take to the field and take these people on.
You have a very international perspective. Your pieces on Russia and the Middle East, et cetera, Latin America. What can we be doing right now to sort of help spread freedom in a time where, as you point out, it's kind of in a precarious situation?
That's a really hard thing because it's going to vary from place to place. But I'm involved in 17 projects in 17 different languages. So Russian, Chinese, Portuguese, Bahasa, Arabic, Persian, and so on. And we're very active in all of those with summer schools, seminars, teaching, getting people to understand these key points. Leonard Reed, the founder of FI, had a good point. He says, we can't be effective if we don't understand the philosophy of liberty and the institutional foundations and rule of law, property, limited government, toleration, and so on. But then also you need to do something that's even harder. It's risky. You need to take risks. To be willing to make proposals for real change, for free trade, eliminating tariffs, which I think is really one of the most important things. This is the time to push the free trade agenda. The liberals of the 18th and 19th centuries understood free trade leads to peace. The academic and scholarly research is now overwhelming on this. Protectionism sets the stage for war. So we should be proposing a radical free trade agenda, and this is something I've been really promoting all over the world. And there are free trade campaigns now being launched in India, in Central Asia, in China, Latin America, and elsewhere. So that's very important. But then the other thing is don't be so fearful of taking risks, of becoming involved in the process of policy change, including politics when that's appropriate in various countries. Too many libertarians have been terrified because they're afraid, well, I might make a compromise and that would make me dirty. Well, the question is, do you want to change the world? Do you want to move toward a freer world? then you have to engage it. And you can't be in this little corner saying, well, we're going to be secure and ineffective. Ineffective people usually feel very good about themselves. It's the people who affect change who are the ones who have doubts, who make mistakes. But that's how you do it. You have to take risks. And it's obviously going to differ from place to place. Our colleagues in China understand where the line is that gets you arrested. And they try and get up really close to it, but generally better not to end up in prison. But you want to move where that line is. And it has been moving over time. Partly because...
And one of those things that is helping push that line, as you mentioned, is trade. Right now, post-financial crisis, do you see a problem? Do you see us backsliding in any ways on trade? I mean, obviously, you mentioned Obama's tire tariffs. We have, of course, the NAFTA issues with Mexican trucks on the road, et cetera. Is this a difficult time when you say right now is the time for more free trade?
Well, I remember what Rahm Emanuel said. You never want a serious crisis to go to waste. And that's what all the protectionists are saying right now. And they are really geared up. The consequence of those policies would be a repeat of Smoot-Hawley. Mm-hmm. Crash the world economy. 1930, Hoover signs that bill. U.S. foreign export trade collapsed as a consequence. Within 2 years, total volume of world trade was down by two-thirds. That's a substantial amount of what the Great Depression was. Now, we run that risk again.
And talking about a time when there is a full frontal assault by the Naomi Kleins of the world on free markets, on classical liberalism, this seems a very important piece. Give us an idea what the most common misperception that you tackle here and, you know, why it's important that we fight back against these things.
One of the issues that I address is whether the market is immoral. And that's an important underlining element of this attack. People in business only care about profits. They don't care about other people. They don't care about others. So that's fundamentally wrong. Markets rest on respect for other people. I could just go out and take stuff. I'm a fairly strong guy, and I'm pretty aggressive, and I'm fairly tough. If I wanted to, I could go take things from people. I don't do that because I respect them. That's what property rights means. And if I want something someone else has, I induce them to give it to me. Now, you can beg, but that's not generally very effective. You can give them something else that they want more. So the market economy rests fundamentally on respect for other people. It's also the case that there's nothing particularly selfish about the market. There's been a misunderstanding of Adam Smith in this regard. People going to the market are partly concerned about others, partly concerned about themselves. But even Mother Teresa tried to get the lowest price for blankets and medicines to help other people. The market was what made possible the charity of the charitable people as well, because they want to economize, they want to find the lowest price. As H.B. Acton, a British philosopher, put it, he says, running a business at a loss is an especially stupid way of being charitable.
What is the future of freedom, and in the context of your book, Realizing Freedom, how do we realize freedom now in a situation that looks so grim, especially for economic freedom?
Well, first off, it's not all the same every place in the world. Looks like that the Germans might end up with a little bit of belt tightening in their government. They have not taken some of the crazy measures that we've seen proposed in this country, namely just turning on the printing presses, but a little bit more restrained in some of Europe. I think that we're in for a very tough slog. But if people make it known that they do not go along with this, and one thing that's come up is this so-called public option. That was a term that was focus grouped, as they say. They went through every name for socialism, and people didn't like it. So this public option, people said, that sounds okay, whatever that is. It's socialism. It's a state-run medical system. And do not believe for a minute that if we get that, it's really going to be self-financing. That's rubbish, and everybody knows it. This is the time for people to stand up and say, no way, and even to be angry about it. I'm not opposed to anger when injustice and foolishness is being proposed. So I'm all in favor of being angry at the United States about the direction the country is taking. I think they should have been angry 3 years ago when Bush was doing it.
Tom Palmer, author of most recently Realizing Freedom, Libertarian Theory, History, and Practice, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Mike.